In 1968, Bev D'Onofrio became one of those girls. She was pregnant and still in high school. The experience was so traumatic that she spent the next 20 years sorting out her feelings, then writing a memoir of her life as a teenage mother on welfare who manages to find her way to college. The book is called Riding in Cars with Boys. Recently, Bev D'Onofrio went back to high school, but a much different school than the one she attended. This school, on Long Island, is called EPA, the Educational Program for Pregnant and Parenting Adolescents. Its student body is made up entirely of teenage mothers.
Your mommy kiss.
What's going on here, huh?
Your mommy kiss.
Confusion.
Have a kiss.
Commotion.
Hairspray and baby powder. That's what you smell at 8 in the morning in the nurseries at the front of EPA. This is the day's first stop. Girls trundle in, a book bag on one shoulder, a diaper bag on the other, their babies riding their hips. As first period creeps closer, the girls kiss their babies goodbye. That's the signal. The young mothers bail out of the nursery and make a dash for homeroom. Girls come into the school pregnant, take classes, give birth, and then return here 2 weeks later. The days are pretty much what you'd find at any ordinary high school. English, science, math, and all the rest, except there's daycare for the babies and parenting classes for the girls.
No one knows.
Who is absent today? Anyone know who else is in?
I'm to spend the day with Ms. Ruber's sophomore English class. When I walk in, there are about a dozen girls scattered around the room, most with poofed Long Island hairdos, slouched in their seats, eyeing me suspiciously like I'm an old lady. Christ, my 23-year-old son Jason would probably seem middle-aged to these kids. I read from a section of my book to get things going.
For the next month, behind Raymond's back, I bumped my ass downstairs, punched myself in the stomach, and threw myself from couch to floor 10 times every night before bed. Anything was better than telling my parents, especially my father. How could I mention the word sex to him when I couldn't stay in the same room through a Playtex Living Bra commercial? So finally, on my way to school one Monday morning, I left a note in the mailbox saying, "Dear Mom and Dad, I'm sorry. I know I've disappointed you. I'm pregnant. Love, your daughter Beverly." School that day was a nightmare. As if I didn't have enough fun.
I look out at the class and wonder how they'll respond. It turns out shyness isn't a problem in this room with these 15 and 16-year-olds. When I'm done reading, the girls barely miss a beat.
I went to a private doctor the first time, you know, to see if I was pregnant, and he had told me, you know, "You're going to abort it, right?" And I'm like, "No." He's like, "Well, I know if my 14-year-old daughter got knocked up, I'd want her to have an abortion." And I was like, "Excuse me, Mom, let's go," you know?
It all sounded so familiar. Had nothing changed? I told the girl some of the stories I'd heard and believed when I was their age, like how if you had sex 2 times within 24 hours, there wouldn't be enough sperm to get pregnant.
Oh, God. So did you hear any of those stories? Or?
No, someone told me that after you have sex, if they don't use a condom, just stand up and push on your stomach and it would work.
Oh, my God.
Yeah? You heard the same thing?
Yeah.
And did you do that? Did you believe it?
I did.
You believe it?
That young woman is Stacy. She's 16 and has blonde hair that's teased and sprayed. She has a sweet face and easy smile. Stacy says that after she got pregnant, she also heard stories about ways to abort her baby, like by sitting in a hot tub of water.
I sat in a bath for 3.5 hours in scalding hot water. I burnt my legs, I burnt the skin off my legs. I had blisters all on my legs, and I couldn't walk. My mother was wondering, "What's going on?" You know, I was like, "I'm really sick. I can't get out of bed. I didn't go to school for like a week."
Finally, 5 months into her pregnancy, she got up the nerve to tell her father.
He just sat, and he didn't say nothing to me. Got up, he called my mother. He's like, "I think you better get home right now." She's like, "What's going on?" He's like, "We have a problem. You better get home." She came home, and I was crying on the couch. She's like, "You don't have to tell me. I already know." She's like, "You're effing pregnant." She's like, "I know it." So she called the cops. There were like 6 cop cars at my house. She had the chief of police there. People like thought I was getting killed or something.
Stacy says her mother wanted her to sign papers saying that she'd been raped by her boyfriend. Stacy refused. Stacy's mother also wanted her to get an abortion. Stacy was 15 when she had her daughter Kayla. I tell the girls that when I got pregnant, I was considered a bad girl by others. I even thought of myself that way. Lisa, a spirited 16-year-old with huge dark eyes and a sheath of black curls, bristles.
I don't consider myself a bad girl. I made a mistake. And I'm living up to my mistake, and I take very good care of my son. Mm-hmm. And if anyone can consider that a bad girl, then I don't think you should judge me until you go through it.
We're the same person. We didn't change. We're just gonna be a mother now. That's all.
Michelle sits in the front row of the class off to the side. She's a pretty brunette with a face round and pale as the moon, a baby's face that looks too old. Like Lisa and Stacy, she's only 16, but unlike her classmates, she rarely cracks a smile and never giggles.
The baby that we're going to have has a father, too, but nobody ever says anything about them. You know how many guys go out and get girls pregnant and nobody knows?
It looks good to the father. Makes him like a stud.
I know a guy, and he must have like 6 or 7 different kids from 6 or 7 different girls. And nobody says anything about them, but it's always us, as long as we got the stomachs and the strollers.
I married the guy who got me pregnant. By the time our 2-year anniversary rolled around, Raymond was out of a job, pumping heroin into his arm and performing breaking and entries to support his habit. After I kicked him out, he volunteered for Vietnam. He never supported me or Jason. Most of these girls seem defined by the disappointments they faced at the hands of men. First their fathers, then boyfriends. Having babies is a way to fix things, to mend a broken family, to cement themselves to a boyfriend, to make one person in the world who will unconditionally love them. Often they're making up for a lost childhood and a father who leaves a lot to be desired.
My father, doesn't have it all. he beats up everything and anything that's in his way.
Algeria's hair is pulled back tight, and she wears 2 huge gold earrings in each ear. She has a quiet smile that hints at inner grace.
He had about 4 or 5 wives, 120 children, I don't even know.
120
wives, wow. He's very sexually aggressive. You know, not towards me. He never been, but towards my older sisters, you know, when they were young. He used to beat my mother up. And beat us up, too.
I was afraid of my father. He was an Italian cop with a temper, which he sometimes lost. Like the time he found out I'd been driving around town with boys at the age of 14. When he slapped me and I refused to look sorry, he slapped me again and again. When he finally found out I was pregnant, he cried at the kitchen table. I think I got some satisfaction out of that. No such luck for Algeria last time she spoke with her dad.
He was called to see how I was doing. I told him I was pregnant. He was like, oh, what happens to everybody? Have a nice day, click. Like, well, thank you for understanding. You know.
What about you? What's your family like?
My whole family on my mother's side is nothing but drug addicts and alcoholics.
This is Michelle again, the young woman in the front row with the sad face.
Nobody ever wanted me. I was like 5 years old worrying about where I was going to live. I never had a family. And I never got to be a little girl.
Angela.
A school like EPA is filled with daily dramas. During break, Michelle is called away to the guidance counselor's office. She's told that because of excessive absences, she's going to have to return to regular high school. This sort of thing has happened before. The 87 girls who attend EPA are sent by their school districts, which pay for each student. Facing tight budgets, the districts are cutting back, pulling students out of EPA, returning them to regular high school. When Michelle gets back to class after hearing the news, she takes her seat and weeps.
My whole life I had problems, but I kind of pushed them aside. I try not to think about them so I don't get upset.
Michelle explains that her 11-month-old baby Anthony has been sick and in and out of the hospital for the past 3 months, making it difficult for her to come into school. Anthony's better now, and Michelle was confident she could make up her work until she got the news. Michelle says that if she has to go back to her old high school, where there's no daycare for her son, she'll probably drop out. Gail Ruber is Michelle's English teacher.
Seeing what's happening with Michelle, seeing what's happening with so many of them, it basically makes you want to sit down and cry. Or it makes you want to just hold them and let them cry. You don't kick a child, it's them.
Several 100,000 teenagers had babies last year in this country. Many will go on welfare. I did. I was on welfare for 8 years. For me, as for most of these girls, getting an education was the first step away from poverty.
They have found that if a youngster has a child before the age of 18, usually in an unwed state, is not mainstreamed back into education, which means is not put back into a school where they have to go every day, then they will continue to have children at the rate of one a year for the next 4 years, and the family will spend approximately 20 years on social services or welfare. Without a program like us to give them hope, where do they go?
Probably not on to college, which is where half of last year's graduating class at EPA has ended up. Michelle, who was long ago abandoned by her family, says that the prospect of being abandoned by her school district and forced to leave EPA terrifies her.
My life would be nothing. This is a stepping stone for me. It goes school, college, career, home. I want to buy a home. I've never had a home. I think that would be really nice.
You walk into the store, everybody's looking at you, you get real red in the face, and you're like, stop looking at me! Before I bite your head off.
So stare back at them. Be like,
yes, I'm pregnant, so what?
Is that what There's something about these girls. Their big eyes and baby faces. Up at 5:30 in the morning to wash and dress and feed their babies, and then wash and dress and feed themselves, doing the best they can with no money to hide their poverty. Ask the young mothers, and no one will say they regret having their baby. Their life is difficult, yes, but there are always those moments that make everything worth it.
Having her. Just having her come out, finding out what it is. I cried.
Oh, when my baby smiled at me.
Oh, yes.
Fell apart, boy. I didn't want to do anything to make her cry again.
When he laughs, I love it. And each time something new happens, like he's just getting his tooth, it's so exciting for me, you know? Because it's always something new, you know?
Well, if you have a problem in school, you know you can go home and they're like... They're always there to look at you, and they're always there for you, your kids, when nobody else is.
The school day at EPA ends where it began, in the nursery, where the girls come to pick up their kids. Stacy, the young woman who tried to give herself an abortion by bathing in boiling hot water, finds her daughter Kayla.
Hi, baby. Hi.
Michelle is here, too, with her son Anthony. He's wearing socks that flop off his toes as he takes a few tentative steps away before he turns quickly around and grabs onto Michelle's leg. Michelle looks weary. She knows she's got a big day ahead of her, which starts with a trip to her old high school.
I'm going down there tomorrow, and I'm going to fight it, and there's no way that they're going to be able to get me out. I'm not going to let that happen.
Indeed, the next morning, Michelle was able to get herself back into EPA. She'd made it over another small hurdle, with a brave face for the world. But I knew better. I saw it in all their eyes. I'd been there. They're afraid that their childhood dreams will never come true now. They're disappointed. They're scared. But they're trying their damnedest, and that's how it all begins. You tell yourself your baby is a blessing instead of a curse, and then, one day, it's true. For National Public Radio, I'm Bev D'Onofrio.